appreciate very much the songs that have been sung, which are an excellent preparation for the study that we want to engage in at this hour. We've been talking this series of lessons concerning the fact that we are citizens of the kingdom of heaven, and that the government of the kingdom of heaven is a monarchy. It is ruled by a king who has all authority in heaven and in earth. There are two words in this statement I've made that are really objectionable to many of us as Americans. One is the word authority. People don't like authority anymore. In fact, we are seeing rebellion against authority in just almost every facet of life. Children are not obedient to their parents. They are not made to respect the authority of their parents. It's evident in the schools that the students are not respectful of authority. They are not instructed to do anything, not expected to do anything, just because the teacher says it or the superintendent says it. They have to be entertained and motivated by other things rather than by authority. And of course, authority is broken down almost completely in government. And it is many times the criminal who has all the rights and not the authority that government exercises. Government may sometimes exercise it wrongly, but government is government ordained by God for the maintaining of peace and harmony in society, as we're taught in Romans, the 13th chapter. But the other word that I want to mention is the word king. If Americans don't like authority, they certainly don't like a king. I don't know if you've read the Declaration of Independence any time recently, but in preparation for this lesson, I went back and read it, and it is an indictment of the whole idea of a king, the idea of one man, particularly one in England, saying what the people must do and what the people must observe is totally objectionable to Americans. We'll have no part of a king. And even when presidents were elected, there was every effort made to avoid the appearance of any kind of monarchy or any kind of royalty among those who ruled. The typical monarchy is most certainly a government of the people by an autocratic king for the glory and the benefit, not of the people, but for the glory and the benefit of the king himself. That's just what we think of when we think of a king or a monarchy. And monarchy has all through the ages been almost identical with tyranny. In fact, that's what Samuel told the people by the direction of the Lord, that their king would be like when they demanded a king. Turn with me back to the book of 1 Samuel, the 8th chapter. And here, after several generations of rule by judges and lack of rule, of course, over some periods of time, the people demanded a king. And Samuel was disturbed that they asked for a king, because it was God who should be acknowledged as their king. And God, in fact, said, "They have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them." But Samuel told them the kind of king that they would have. Beginning with verse 10, Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who asked him for a king. And he said, "This will be the behavior of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for his own chariots to be his horsemen. Some will run before his chariots. He will appoint captains over his thousands and captains over his fifties. Will set some to plow his ground and reap his harvest, some to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, and bakers. And he'll take the best of your fields, your vineyards, and your olive groves and give them to his servants. He'll take a tenth of your grain and your vintage and give it to his officers and servants. And he'll take your manservants and your maidservants and your finest young men and your donkeys and put them to his work. He will take a tenth of your sheep and you will be his servants." That pretty well described most kings. And Samuel said, that's the kind of king you will have. Well, and that's pretty well the kind of king Saul was. Saul was the first king, and he was an autocrat. The dictionary defines an autocrat as a domineering, self-willed person. And that pretty well describes old King Saul. He was controlled during much of his life by envy, jealousy, maintaining his own position, and being suspicious of anyone who might take his place. On one occasion, because a priest befriended David, he killed not simply that priest, but 85 priests of God. And he spent the latter years of his reign chasing David. David said, "You've come out against me as a flea in the wilderness." But that was exactly what occupied his attention. And when he left the office, when he was killed in battle, he left Israel as sheep without a shepherd. And the Philistines had come up into the heart of Israel and were controlling much of the land that God had actually given to his people. Well, they were helpless to find food. Sheep have often been the symbol of God's people. And one of the reasons that sheep are so much like us, or maybe we're so much like sheep, is that sheep are helpless to find their own food. They are clueless when they're lost. They're defenseless when they're attacked. And consequently, they must have a shepherd. They must have a shepherd to feed them, to see that they have food to eat, to lead them and to seek them when they're lost, and to defend them when they're attacked by wild animals. Consequently, the shepherd must be wise. He must be wise enough to know where the food is. He must be wise enough to know where the enemies might be. He has to be wise enough to keep up with the sheep. Not only that, but he has to be brave, because from time to time, animals have to be fought. Even thieves have to be fended off from the sheep. And in order to be all of this, he has to be loving and patient with the sheep. And Saul, most certainly, was none of these things. But in contrast, David was appointed to be king of God's people. And it's said of him particularly that he was taken from the sheepfold. He valiantly defended his sheep. You remember he told Saul, when Saul was questioning whether he would be strong enough to go after Goliath or not, that he had actually killed a lion and a bear with his own bare hands, protecting his sheep. David, the Lord had said to David, "You must shepherd my people Israel and be ruler over them." So here's a different kind of king, a king who's not going to be an autocrat, as Saul was and as most kings were, but he was to be a shepherd king. He was to be a champion of the people. And indeed, he proved to be a champion of the people of God. And again, he was very careful to see that justice was done. Well, as we move on in the history of Israel, God promised that David would have an eternal throne. In other words, that his family, all through the generations, would be the rulers. David's grandson was another best despot like Saul. We talk about the golden age of Solomon, and in many ways it was, but Solomon was ruling for his own benefit. He made the burdens great for the people. And then when his son came to the throne, he said, my finger will be greater than my father's loins, and he beat you with whips, and I'll beat you with scorpions, and the people rebelled against him. All the kings in breakaway Israel were wicked, and even those who were David's descendants, many were wicked and selfish. Because of sin, they were actually taken into captivity. And in captivity, they had no king, and they thought that God's promise of a king had failed. Well, had God's promise failed? No. Ezekiel was one who was in captivity, and he has said concerning the future, "I will establish one shepherd over them, and he shall feed them, my servant David, and he shall feed them and be their shepherd, and the Lord will be their God, and my servant David will be a king among them. I, the Lord, have spoken. A promise for the future. But David had been dead for 400 years. Why in the world would he say, I'm going to have my servant David as a king over my people? Well, David was the best king they could think of. And sometime when you're talking with people about something that is better than they can imagine, you have to use some imperfect illustrations. I think that's what's done in the book of Revelation in an effort to describe heaven. A street of gold, walls of jasper. Any city in those days had walls, but here are walls of jasper and gates of pearl. Are these things literal? No, I don't think they're literal, but it's just the most beautiful city we could imagine. And so he describes it in terms with which we actually are familiar. I heard an illustration one time about, in an effort to illustrate that particular point, about someone who goes from a Kansas farm to the city of New York. And he comes back and tries to tell the people in Kansas about New York. And they say, you know our silos? Well, they've got big buildings like that. And you, well, a building, a silo is nothing like the Empire State Building. And yet that's the best a person in Kansas could understand. And you know how a mole goes under the ground? Well, they got trains that go under the, well, the subways are nothing like a mole. But that would be about as close as you could get to describing a subway if you were talking to a person from Kansas. And so God, in describing things that are beyond our comprehension, sometimes had to use the things that we can comprehend to try to describe things that we cannot. And so David, who was the best king they could think of, was said to be the one who was going to reign in the future. The David who was prophesied, of course, would be a far greater king than the original David. 600 years later, an angel made a prophecy to a woman, a virgin, Mary. And he said, do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Highest. And the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David. And he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. And of his kingdom there will be no end. Here was a greater king than David who was to come. He was, in contrast with David, a perfect representative of God. Jesus said in John 14:9, he that has seen me has seen the Father. And we pointed out yesterday in one of our studies that the kings of Israel were supposed to be representatives of God, but they were so imperfect. Even the best, David, imperfect. Representation of God. But Jesus was the perfect image of God, the very image of him who made us. And not only that, but he was more just than David. And he was a king with authority, not simply over a portion of land as David was, but all authority in heaven and on earth. And he's a king in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. In the earlier message, we suggested the fact that if you had a perfect king, it would be better than a government run by imperfect people. But we don't have any perfect kings in our human existence. But Jesus was perfect, wise in all things, having all the treasures of wisdom and of knowledge. And he's a king that was never to be replaced. If you had a perfect king among human beings, his son might not be perfect and probably would not be. You have to worry about what the next king's going to be like. But we don't have to worry about that with Jesus because he is an eternal king. Not only that, he's a greater shepherd even than David was. Jesus knew about shepherds. We have some statements from him in the book of John. In which he describes himself as a shepherd. And he demonstrates that he knew about shepherds. Most everybody knew about shepherds in those days because shepherds were very, very common. Jesus said, he that entered by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens. What does this mean? Well, in the days when they were keeping sheep out in the wilderness, they would not feel free and comfortable just to sleep out in the open air with the sheep, because wild animals might come in the night, or thieves come in the night. And so they had these sheep folds that had been prepared with walls, and there would be a small entrance into the fold, and there would be a doorkeeper there, and he would know the shepherds in the area when they came with their sheep, and he'd let them in. But if a stranger showed up that he didn't know, he wouldn't let him in because he might be a thief and run off with the sheep. So he says to them, the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice. In other words, they understand the voice of their shepherd. There's been something reported very often by travelers in that country about two shepherds with their flocks of sheep. And, of course, being out there in the wilderness, they would rejoice in the opportunity to have a little bit of a conversation with another human being. And so they'd come together, and the shepherd would get to talking. And while the shepherds were talking, all the sheep would just kind of intermingle, the sheep of the different shepherds. But when they got ready to leave, the shepherd would call, and his own sheep would follow him, and the other shepherd's sheep would follow him. And so they would just separate and go on their way. The shepherd had his voice known by the sheep, and they would hear his voice and they would follow. He called his own sheep by name. It didn't matter if he had 100 sheep. He knew that had a pet name for each one of them, and he leads them out. And when he leads them out, he leads them out because he knows he wants to find whatever danger there might be first. And the sheep will not be affected by that. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. And he says, I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. That's a different kind of king, isn't it? A king who gives his life for his soldiers. But a hireling who is not the shepherd, one who does not know own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. But I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep. I know my sheep, and am known by my own. There is a close relationship between the shepherd and the sheep, and Jesus says, I have that relationship. Behold your king then. He is a shepherd who knows you. Can you imagine a king knowing those who are his citizens? The president certainly doesn't know me. Our governor Deal never heard of me. The mayor of the town where I live doesn't know me. If we have a commissioner, he doesn't know me either. I'm a nobody in this present government in the world. But my king, my heavenly king, knows me. And he knows you if you're one of his sheep. Not only that, but he leads you in paths of righteousness. I dare not follow what leadership some human leaders might provide. But I know when I follow my king that he is leading me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Not only that, but he provides me with living bread. Those who eat of the kind of bread that might be given by a king or a president or by the government, that bread is going to fail. But Jesus said, whoever eats of the bread that I give him will never hunger again. And he goes before us, facing every enemy first. There is no temptation taking you, but such is common to man. And the Lord has been tempted in all points, like as we have. And he's already given his life to defeat Satan and to save us. Now, isn't that an opposite? You think of a king going into battle, and how many soldiers would he risk in order to save his own life? He would perhaps risk a whole company of men, maybe 1,000 men, let them be slaughtered so he could save his life, because he's the important one, and the soldiers give their life for the king. But this king gives his life for his soldiers. He gives his life for his citizens. That's the kind of king we have, and he will lead us into the eternal fold of safety. We may rebel against the idea of a king, but whoever knew of a king like this? This is the divine king. This is the king who is totally different, who loves us, who knows us, who calls us. This is a king who is totally absorbed with our benefit and our good and not with himself. He's the only shepherd that knows the way. And the question is, will we follow him? This heavenly monarch is a government of the people, but it is by a loving and all-wise king for the benefit of his loyal subjects. And how can we refuse to follow him? Why do sheep follow a shepherd? First, they have faith in him to trust his care. They trust him. They know he loves them, and they love him. And why do we follow Jesus? Because we have absolute faith in him. We know that where he leads us is the right way. And we know he loves us and is concerned for us. But the whole question is, do we love him enough to follow him? Jesus, the loving shepherd, calls us to him. And the greatest question of life is whether we will hear his voice and follow him. The Bible talks about those who have been foreordained and predestined to eternal life. And I believe there are those who are foreordained and predestined. I don't believe that God, before the foundation of the world, determined what individuals that would be so that they cannot follow Jesus if they want to. On the other hand, they must, regardless of how they feel about it. God didn't make that kind of choice. But he made a choice that those who would follow Jesus would be made into the image of Christ and would reach the eternal goal. And the whole question is, are you attuned to the call of the shepherd? If you're attuned to the call of the shepherd, then you're one of his sheep. You're following him. You're acknowledging him as your leader and your defender and your guide and your hope. But if you refuse to hear him, then you're one who's going to be lost. Not because God foreordained it, but because when he sent his shepherd, you wouldn't listen. Is there someone here this morning who will respond to the shepherd's call as we stand and sing the song that's been selected?